Have you ever forgotten to vote?
Once.
Oh, really? It's like my worst nightmare.
I got a fine.
Oh, you did? Did you pay it?
Yeah. It was back when it was only $50.
Well, apparently now, because it's all done by computers, you know, when you go in, yeah, there's no books anymore.
They had a book for the last one I went to, but I live in the back of nowhere, so they might not have had mobile service.
It was all computers. It was all computers, which is easily tracked.
Mm.
And apparently the fines have gone up, and it's quite hefty now.
I think it's over $100.
Yeah. So don't forget next time.
That's a lot of beer.
Oh, I get so nervous I'm going to forget. I actually pre-vote because it's so important to me.
Yeah,
so I pre-vote so I don't forget on the day. Is that weird?
You're a little obsessed with politics, though, aren't you?
I am.
Have you ever thought of running?
Yeah, no. I want to be one of those, like, mad campaign managers behind the scenes, you know, but I'm not cutthroat
totally
or ruthless enough
that.
For that.
No, you're too nice.
Yeah, I am. I'm way too nice. So.
you'd get crushed.
I would.
Welcome to the Tradies Business Show, helping you get off the tools and into true business ownership so you can spend more time doing the things that matter most. Now, here are your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Michaela Clark.
So welcome back to another episode of the Tradies Business Show, where I got to live a lifelong dream today, Warwick.
G'day, listeners. Yes, Michaela, you... Look,
I was not as cutting or as, like, late line or Q&A.
You were very... You were very nice, Michaela.
Yeah, I was. So,
you're
may
not
cut out
for politics.
No, I may not be up there with the Tony Jones of the world. We got to interview a politician today. Mm. Now, don't tune out, listeners. Don't stay with us.
Was actually, I have to say, and g'day to today's guest, if and when you listen to this, Wyatt. But no, I said to Michaela after we wrapped up this interview that, you know what? I was really impressed and pleasantly surprised.
Yes.
I don't follow politics. I take enough of an interest based on, you know, the big issues, the big policies. You know, I have a particular view of politics, as we all do in this country, but I tend to try and stay out of all of the rubbish. But after chatting with today's guest, I'd be interested to find out a little more about perhaps some of the candidates. So, yeah.
Well, we got Wyatt Roy in because, A, his office is, like, literally next door to the studio.
It's very convenient.
No, B, because we're a big media outlet and we get the big guests on this show now.
Absolutely. And he's the
Assistant Minister for Innovation.
Yes.
So, he's been young. He was the youngest member of Parliament, which he talks about his story.
And obviously innovation, big thing for you as a listener in your business. And Wyatt's very passionate about business, and he actually, one of the things it stood out for me, and I liked this about the way he spoke, is he talks about the business of politics, and he approaches it like a business. I mean, we talked marketing,
branding, entrepreneurship.
He was the first in his family to finish high school. He comes from a farming background, so, you know, real earthy, real sort of a guy, not your typical, you know, middle-aged Caucasian male politician. So.
And he talks about, you know, dealing with the fear of change and innovation coming in as a small business owner, what you can do. We also touch on the building construction reforms very briefly, so don't worry.
Some big stuff coming there.
Yeah, we didn't worry too much about that. But really did try to focus on the internet and speeds, of course, and he's my local member. You will get that during the interview because I do pin him on my internet speed, which I'm very happy to see that Torwell, my little Torwell fishing village, is on the list.
Anyway,
I guess it helps having the Assistant Minister for Innovation as your local member, doesn't it?
It's handy, isn't it? You might have to shout him lunch. So have a listen to this interview. I think you'll also be pleasantly surprised, listeners. We're making politics relevant to tradies. So
don't tune out, we promise.
And listen through to the end because we've got some really cool stuff to talk about.
Okay, Warwick, so we have a very distinguished guest. Did I say it right?
Yes, you actually got it right, yeah. Which is good.
Today, we actually have a federal member of parliament, Wyatt Roy. Welcome to the show.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome to have you here, Wyatt.
Oh, it's very exciting.
I need to pre-warn you. Unfortunately, I live in your electorate, and I say unfortunately because my mother has a long list of letters she's told me she's going to write you. So I'm just giving you a pre-warning.
You tell Mum I love her. If there's anything I can do to help her out, we're always here.
I'll tell her, and my husband wants to have a beer with you, so
good.
Don't door knock in Torbals or like it.
Okay. Yeah. We can do both. That's fine. I would stop door knocking at that point.
Don't come down this street. So, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Now, I guess for our listeners, may not know a lot about you, so we'd love to hear your background because it's quite interesting.
Sure.
Being the youngest member of Parliament, Federal Parliament, am I correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Excellent. And now Assistant Minister for Innovation.
That's it.
Tell us a little bit how you got into it, I guess.
So this is probably the last place that I ever thought I would end up. I come from a farming family on the Sunshine Coast on Roy's Road. They're strawberry farmers, which is a great way to grow up. I sort of had the best of both worlds, sort of the farm and then, you know, not living too far away from the real world in some cases, I guess. I'm the first person in my family to finish high school, including two older brothers who I love dearly, and they've done other things. My family traditionally votes for the Labor Party, and I'm in the Liberal Party. So, but I'm convincing them. You know, I'm bringing them over, which is great. But I don't come from any sort of political background. But how I became involved in all of this was I was, among many of the jobs I was working at the time, I was helping out a mate of mine named Pat, who ended up in a wheelchair. I was also studying economics, and I was relatively good at that. And it was my economics lecturer who said, if you put helping people together with an understanding of economics, you actually can make a difference, which is a horrible cliche, but I think that's true. And she convinced me to get involved in politics, and I did. And then once I became involved, I realised that you actually can make a difference. You can do something. And very quickly, I found myself in the federal parliament.
Great.
Been here for nearly 6 years now.
So being the youngest member when you got elected, there was a lot of attention. So how have you found it being the youngest member, and has it been what you thought being in Parliament?
I love this job. Yeah. I am so lucky to do it. I don't think you can really have high expectations in this job. It's sort of it's very unique. There is nothing else quite like this, but it's been incredible. And I think, you know, in terms of the interest around my age, which is pretty natural, it's pretty different than I was there at 20. And as you know, most people in Parliament are a lot older than that. I think people have really been excited about the idea of diversity in representation. You know, if you bring people from different backgrounds and you're talking about the future of the country, surely that's much better than everybody coming from the same background and looking and sounding the same. And people have been kind of excited about that. And I've been lucky to ride that roller coaster.
Cool.
Has it been a positive aspect of your personal brand? I mean, we talk to our listeners a lot about branding and their position in the market. How's that actually worked for you, Wyatt?
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think you just need to look and sound like the politicians that we've had for 100 years. And the idea that just because something's been done a certain way in the past means that it always needs to be done that way, I think is a bit ridiculous. And I think people have been excited about that. I think the question you have to put to people is, what do you want from a politician? And then build from that. And no one's ever said to me, they want a white male aged over 55, right? Like, we get a lot of them, but that's not what they've said. They want someone with honesty. You know, and I don't think that's practiced enough in our profession, but I'm very honest. They want someone with integrity, you know, who's got some strong convictions and beliefs and defends that. And I think more important than anything else, and this is forgotten so much in this business, is they want someone who can listen. I represent 140,000 people. I'm not going to share every one of their experiences. I'm not going to share all their life experience, but I can listen to them. And then you can effectively advocate for them after you've done that. And I think if you don't listen in the first place, you can't actually do this job.
Yeah. And so, I mean, for a lot of people, often when they're in the workplace and building a business, often their integrity can come into question. Mm. You know, things may be happening that they personally may not agree with. I'm sure that would happen in politics.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that when, you know, there's things that may happen that necessarily aren't in line with you being your authentic self?
I think there's two things to realise. And the first is that you are not the smartest person in the room. Way too many people come into this job thinking, oh, I'm the smartest person, therefore everyone should listen to me. And the reality is, when you're dealing with so many different issues, you can't be the expert on every single field. And how you overcome that is you be part of an effective team. like any business, effective politicians, I think, recognize their strengths and their weakness as part of that team, and they'll offset themselves, you know. So it's not just me, it's Scott Morrison and Malcolm Turnbull and Julie Bishop, all these people that I work with. And when you do that collectively, I think that helps. The other big thing is have the fight, right? Yeah. You don't have to win the fight, but you have to have the fight. And you would never see it in the media, or very rarely would you see it in the media, because it's all internal. But I don't see it as my job to sort of just follow the party line or just do what the party says. It's actually to change the party line if I believe in it strongly enough. And so you get up in the party room and you articulate what you believe in. You have the fight, and sometimes I win. You know, I've been up in the party room on some issues where the party position has changed after you make a speech and sort of say to people, this is what we should do. And sometimes you lose. But, you know, I can't expect to win all the time. But I can win some of the time if I'm in there having a go. And I think that's what people really want. And that's how you deal with it yourself. I think by, you know, if it was all just about me and what I thought, well, it'd be a pretty scary world.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier, Wyatt, that you've, you know, decided to part with the family history of voting Labor.
Yeah.
And, you know, you within the Liberal Party. What was behind that? And I guess for our listeners as well, you know, as punters, we get a particular version of politics which has been fed to us by the media.
Yeah.
And so we just don't have access to all of the information. I mean, I suspect a lot of our listeners are probably, well, actually, that might be an incorrect assumption there, but Labor voters, you know, it's traditionally a blue collar type party.
Yeah.
But then most of our listeners are actually business owners. So I find quite a high number of tradie business owners vote Liberal.
Yeah.
You know, that seems to be the way it's polarised. What is the difference? And I mean, is it something that we should actually pay attention to?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think we talk about this anywhere near enough. You know, we get caught up in all the ups and downs of daily politics, but we don't talk about, well, what is it that you actually stand for and believe in? And for me, as I said, it started out helping my mate Pat, who was in a wheelchair. And a few things really struck me. One was when the government was meant to be helping him, it was making life more difficult. When he wanted to be aspirational, he got cut down for trying to be aspirational. And as part of the Liberal Party or the Liberal National Party, it's a really simple philosophy. If you want to work hard, let's absolutely champion that and reward that. Let's not penalise that. If you want to be aspirational, that is a great thing, not something we should attack. We believe that the great equaliser in our society is equality of opportunity, right? So let's give everyone equal access to healthcare and education and job opportunities, but not equality of subsidy. So trying to reorient society by moving money around and trying to take it from one person, give it to another. Let's give everyone the same opportunity. If they work hard, fantastic. They'll be rewarded from that. And let's champion that. And the final really big thing, and this is really important to me, is I think, and we think, the Australian people are pretty smart, intelligent, capable people. And wherever possible, we want to get government out of your life. And we don't want to be putting government back into the centre of our society, into our lives. And that's the very big difference between the two sides of politics. So, you know, you should make informed, smart choices, and the government shouldn't be telling you what to do with your life. And that's a big difference.
So I know a lot of our listeners, I'm going to make an assumption here, probably don't follow politics as regularly.
That's very healthy.
As they should.
That's not a bad thing. You should be way more chilled.
Warwick, for example, knows nothing about politics, doesn't follow it at all.
I actually studied it at university for a time as part of my bachelor's degree.
Wow.
And I got failed on an assignment because I took somewhat of an opposing view to the lecturer and I had to resubmit.
It's a good way to fail, usually.
He didn't like my take on things.
So why should our listeners get interested in politics as far as, you know, actually have an interest in the policies that are out there? Because a lot of say, oh, you know, it doesn't affect me or nothing's ever going to change. Why should they pay attention?
Well, I think that you really can actually have your voice heard in this country. Now, again, it's not always to the degree that we would like, but it is very significant. I mean, we have a compulsory voting system in this country. Everyone goes out there and has a say on the future of our country. And unless you're sort of vaguely informed about what the debates are, where we're heading, then it's very hard to make an informed decision. And we are very lucky in this sense. I mean, I'll give you a little story. My best mates are from Zimbabwe. And you look at what's happened in Zimbabwe, it's so sad. And these are, you know, mates my age, many of them tradies themselves, who would kill to be able to vote about the future of their country and what's happened to that country. And they can't. And that's all taken away from them. And the fact that we at least have that opportunity is something we should value. And we should try and make sure our voices are heard. And I think you can do that in this country.
It's very interesting. I was recently volunteering on a polling booth for local elections. And I was shocked at how many people do not know who they're going to vote for when they turn up at the polling booth. I was really shocked. I thought most people kind of must make an informed decision, but it's not. And that's scary that a lot of people actually, you know, make an informed decision and choose whatever side you think, but at least have some information. So it really surprised me about how much people just aren't interested, I guess, anymore.
Well, and I see that as well, and I'm just speaking from my own personal experience in the recent local government elections, is I couldn't have distinguished between the candidates, honestly, because the stuff they were going to market with, and I like the fact that you talk about this business, you know, politics as a business, wide, and that's the first time I've heard that, I'll be honest. I'm not blowing smoke, mate, just because your last name is the same name as my dad's.
We won't get into that.
But I just think people look at who's out there representing them, don't identify with any of them. I mean, local government's probably a little different, but I couldn't have told you what the policies were for each of the candidates, what they stood for. Like, they were really just out there running almost popularity campaigns rather than content-driven.
Did you go look, though? Did you go look for their information about what policies they had on, like, websites and social? Did you go look?
Hang on. If I'm marketing to customers, would I say to my customers, no, you need to come and research my business?
I think you've got a point, Matt. I mean, I've got to be honest with you. I think part of our job, big part of our job, is actually getting out there and talking to people and breaking out of this. Now, it's not easy, but we have to do this. So, give you know, some perspective. I represent 140,000 people. I'm never going to meet all of them, you know, as much as I would like to do that. But I can meet a lot of them. I think more often than not, we have to break out of the sort of bubble wrap that has captured politics. I mean, everyone can tell you when a politician is giving you some cheap line that doesn't really mean anything and it's a feel-good statement.
Yep.
And we've desperately got to break out of that. And, you know, I do that through a number of ways. I mean, you know, talking about marketing and branding and social media is a big part of what I do, but so is getting out and door knocking, and so is, I love doing like town hall style meetings where it's just me and a microphone and a heap of people, and I start these meetings by saying, give me the most difficult questions you've got, the most controversial ones you've got, here's the microphone, I'll listen, and then we'll have a proper exchange of ideas. That doesn't happen anywhere near enough. And I think as much as I like new ways of engaging, and that's important, that kind of like old school, you know, standing on a milk crate, you know, I'm pretty short, so I've got to do that, you know, talking to people in the street style politics, that matters. And I do as much of that as possible.
Yeah. So my mother will be coming to the Torble Town Hall if you have one of this election campaign. She's already written her questions out and she tried them on me. I said, I'm not asking them. This isn't about you, Mum, show. Yeah. Okay. So let's get into... Sorry.
I was just going to say on that. I mean, I don't see our members actually pitching for our business.
Mm.
And if I'm going to use my compulsory vote to influence, I guess, who ends up, you know, running our local area or our state or our nation, then give me a reason to actually turn up. Otherwise, I know people who have donkey voted because they're like, you know what, I don't think any of these people really represent me. They don't understand me as someone in the electorate. Yeah. So,
and this is what we have to break out of, and it's so important. And I think, as I was saying, just, you know, sound bites and political glib lines or flashy media isn't actually the way to do this. We've got to kind of get that earthiness back into politics as much as possible.
Awesome, mate. Well, I'll carry your milk crate for
Thanks, mate. Yes, I appreciate that.
Okay, I'm just going to stop the bromance now.
I'll have my yellow pages instead.
So one big area that I know you're passionate about is innovation and small business. And a lot of our guys, you know, they're in an industry that hasn't really had a lot of innovation and is screaming for it.
Yeah.
How do you see the building construction industry innovating going forward? Or what can they do to
change,
be more innovative?
Yeah. I think the first thing is we've got to recognise what's happening more broadly, and that's that there's a lot of change happening. You know, it doesn't matter whether in building and construction or in real estate or whatever business you're in, everyone's seeing a huge amount of change happening, and that's predominantly because of technology. So if you look at the way that we communicate, we talk with people, it's now radically different to 10, 20 years ago, and the world's kind of a smaller place. as well. Because we're more interconnected, it's easy to get around. The world's much smaller than it was 10 or 20 years ago. And when people see that change, they often sort of respond with fear, right? They sort of say, well, how am I going to protect my current business model from all this change that I'm seeing? And instead, if we actually say, well, hang on, how do we make that change our friend? How do we embrace that? Then you can make an enormous difference to your business. And, you know, to give you a classic example, a couple of days ago, I held a big function with Facebook and some small businesses, a number of small businesses, and we brought them in. And these were people who were never engaged on Facebook or reaching out to their customers, as you were talking about. And there were some tradies in there. There was some, you know, there was a local restaurant, you know, all these great different businesses. And when you actually start having this conversation and say, well, hang on, you're paying $1,000 to put an ad in a local paper that we like, but probably no one's reading. Or you pay $1,000 and you can hit, you know, 50, 60,000 local people. And then you can actually target the people that want your business and go after that. And you could see people like it was a light bulb moment and they were sort of clicking on. And I think from a marketing perspective for any business, particularly with tradies, this is, you know, absolutely vital. Getting yourself out in front of people, particularly the people that are looking for your business, is now cheaper, more affordable, more accessible than ever before. And I think looking at those sorts of opportunities, regardless of, you know, the actual internals of your business, and all the rest that goes, strikes me as the most obvious.
So I don't know if we're supposed to talk about internet speed in Australia. Why?
Sure.
is that one of those things on the list? Is like, do not talk about these things.
No,
but you know, there's some stats released recently that put us way down the list here in Australia, despite the, you know, multi-billion-dollar investment in the NBN thing.
Yeah.
What's the go, mate? And what's your take on all this?
Look, it is a massive issue for us. And the reality is we're a really small population with a really big country. And like all things in life, time and money matter, right? So if time and money didn't matter, we'd all have the best internet in the world. It'd be free. Mm-hmm. You know, we would have had it yesterday. But the reality is that's not the case. And essentially, all effort that we're putting into the rollout of the NBN is about bringing it forward. So when we came to government, we conducted a review, a strategic review, independent from us, and it said that the rollout wouldn't be finished until 2024. So as much as I would like all of us to have the best internet in the world, my real concern is people, and we had this experience locally, we've managed to turn it around, you know, a lot of people who had some of the worst internet connections in the country, talking like dial-up ADSL1 speeds, and we were able to bring that forward from that 2024 date and ensure they got really good internet. You know, we're talking about 100 megabits down, which is really fast, several years sooner, cheaper, more affordably. And that's where we've put the effort. And we've done it through a pretty simple way. So we conducted the first broadband review in the country. So we literally surveyed who has what, which had never been done, which is a pretty remarkable thing. And we gave that to NBN Co. And we said, the people with the worst internet, we want you to target them first.
Mm.
Very simple premise. And that's really changed the model. We've been agnostic about the technology. So we've said, you know, whatever works, use it, which in some cases in rural communities means putting up, you know, super fast satellites in western parts of this area. It means high-speed wireless broadband, which gives you about the 100 megabit speed, way cheaper. It's not like your 4G. It's heaps better than that.
Yep.
And by being agnostic about that as well, we've again been able to accelerate this. Now, of course, if I could go back and redesign the whole thing, which you can't, there's no way that you create a government monopoly in competition with everyone else. You know, the government would have had a role to play, but you would have used private providers. And I'll give you one of the best examples I've seen. I was in sort of semi-rural WA, like literally in the middle of nowhere, and there's a company with a gigabyte download speed creating animation movies for China, and it's done at a fraction of the cost of what NBN Co. would have done for the fiber. And they've got it now. They got it years sooner. We can't redesign this whole system, but we can create a rollout system that's based on speeding up the time that it takes for you to get it, because you can't wait in this wasteland for years and years and years and then get great internet. That doesn't help anybody.
Yeah.
Just a note, Torval did miss out on the local NBN rollout.
But we have a plan.
Do we have a plan.
They will be getting high-speed. Your mum will be happy.
No, it's me.
We'll be putting up those high-speed wireless towers in about a year's time, I think, off the top of my head.
Okay, so I think I can hold out and not move for another year. That's good to hear.
It's certainly on my radar. Well, my
our passionate community of 400 in Torval are very passionate about our internet.
There must be somebody influential in my area because I think we've got a population of 2,000 and I've had it for the last 18 months.
You've got a tower in your yard.
I know.
I don't have water and I don't have sewage, but God, I want fast internet. But anyway. And this is becoming more of an issue for our guys because now they're out using mobile tablets.
Yep.
They're improving and getting more productive by using cloud systems.
Yep.
So before, you know, it wasn't, you know, they'd go, they'd fix a toilet, the internet didn't affect them as much. But now, you know, the other day I was in Telstra, poor Telstra, and they'd had their outage and this one tradie was in there with his phone, goes, I can't get my jobs. Yeah. I don't know where I'm supposed to be going, you know. And it was only for an hour that he didn't have it. But it highlighted the impact now that our internet is having. And if they go to a black spot and they don't have the customer addresses or whatever, so.
I actually think you've hit another point that's really important in this, and that's the mobile coverage as well, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of my favourite sort of tech startups is a company called Red Eye Apps, and these were some guys that were involved in large-scale infrastructure drawings for, you know, think like the electricity network. It was all paper-based. They made it an app where you just upload it, it's done. Huge growth, lots of employment, really great story. But of course, you need really good 4G coverage. Mm. And the NBN stuff that we're talking about really has very little to do with that. And one of the things that we realized in this space is the black spot issue that you were talking about. Again, massive country, small population. There's all these areas where there was no phone coverage or 4G mobile coverage at all. And so under the former government, not $1 was actually spent addressing that. We've created a $100 million fund where we will say to the private sector, here's $100 million on the table because it's not really commercially viable for them to fix this issue. We'll put that on. You come in and we'll address all these black spots where it hasn't happened. I'm really proud to say I'm building one in my electorate up in Mount Mee. give that a shameless plug, making a massive difference.
Donnybrook?
That will help Donnybrook and Torval. It will help because it's up at Mount Mee. It will go all the way out to Bribie Island and all the way down to Kalanga. But I think this is a really practical thing, recognising that, you know, how we interface with technology isn't just from the plug in the home. It's the mobile devices. Yep. That's been such a successful program. We want to really ramp that up and keep taking that further. And again, it's a common sense thing. Big country, let's make sure we've got the coverage that we need, not just in the plug, but in the actual device.
It highlights it, though. The other day I went to Donnybrook Post Office and I had to transfer money on my mobile, and that's a little bit of a black spot in Donnybrook.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. And I'm like, what am I going to do? I've got my phone and I felt useless. I felt like my arms had been cut off. So it's amazing how much relying on technology now for our daily life.
And that's exponential.
Yeah.
So what if we sort of loop back to small business, I mean, you know, innovation, what do you see as the, I know this is a really big question, but what's the future of small business and in terms of government's role in that, you know, what do you see as being the landscape moving forward?
Well, you know, when we talk about innovation, I often try and talk about entrepreneurship and put that back at the heart of this. And I mean, essentially, it's about a new way of doing business. We've got technology predominantly that helps change us do business. And I think if we can be more productive, more efficient, that frees up our time and resources for you to go out there and be these great entrepreneurs that you naturally are. And also, I think there's a bit of change to our culture in terms of risk and failure as part of this. I mean, innovation inherently by doing something different can be risky. Mm. And I think as a country, we've often sort of said, well, anything too risky, we'll try and hold off on. But if we create an environment, and government can help with this with tax incentives, with, you know, changing bankruptcy law and solvency law, all these different policy levers that we've got, if we make it as easy as possible for you to go out to try and start a new business or to change your business model, that might fail. If you can pick yourself up from that and change it as easily as possible, I think those are really practical ways of doing this. And I'll give you a great example because I think this sort of contextualizes into something you actually can see. So just this week, I helped facilitate a deal between the Chamber of Commerce and Industry in Queensland with about 4,000 of their members, which are all small and medium enterprises, with a great startup, which is all about connecting the people that want jobs with the jobs that they've got the skill set to require. So rather than going through the traditional process that can be quite clunky or difficult, or it's like a shotgun approach, these guys have this incredible, you know, algorithm and way of figuring out who needs what jobs where. So you had this great, crazy tech startup signing a deal with these traditional small and medium enterprises, and by freeing people up, they're going to, one, get better staff, and two, they're going to not spend as much time on that as they used to, and they can spend more time doing practical things. And to me, that's kind of like an example of, you know, where I can see this affecting our traditional businesses. I don't think we should think about innovation as something that's separate from small and medium enterprises or our traditional strengths. It's it's absolutely critical that we do this because that's where we're going to see the real growth and real jobs.
Yeah, I read about that partnership. I thought that was such a great idea. And just from a business perspective, joint venture partnerships and how well that can work together as well.
So. Yeah, and it's simple.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the best innovations are really simple.
Now, don't tune out, listeners, but yes, there may be an election coming up. So we're going to dumb it down for you today. There's all this double disillusion talk and all this. So Wyatt's going to give us the 101 on what's going on at the moment.
Where
and,
we're at.
Yeah, where we're at and what's happening and what's all this mean for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unfortunately in this country, you know, we don't have fixed terms. So there's always this media speculation about elections and it makes me sick. So I can only imagine how sick and tired people get of, you know, election speculation. But essentially what's happening, everyone has seen, and people in your industry, particularly you know, the chippies and the tradies and the rest who deal with big construction sites would see, there's been a lot of union militancy and unlawful activity on construction sites, which has made that very difficult to do business. When we were in government last time, under John Howard, we had a institution called the Australian Building and Construction Commission, which essentially made sure the rule of law was maintained on construction sites, made it easy to do business with them when the, you know, you knew you weren't going to be held over by anybody. The Labor Party came to power and they abolished that, and we've seen a really big change. So the construction industry is the third largest contributor to the economy, employs over 1 million people. When the ABC existed, it added enormously to GDP and jobs growth. When it went, that's gone to the wayside, and we've seen days lost to industrial action increase by over 34%. So it's kind of like it's a proven policy. We knew it would work. We want to bring it back. And we took that to the last election. People voted for us, so that's a mandate. We've taken that up to the Senate twice. They've said no. Malcolm, or the Prime Minister, has said that this is a really important part of creating jobs and a secure economy. He wants to bring it back in the coming weeks. If the Senate votes that down a third time, then he'll call an election on that issue, and all of the Senate will be up for an election, which means people can then vote for who they want and what mandate they have on that issue. And if they pass it, then we'll have an election when it's due in probably August, a month later, or September.
Yep. And if not, it'll be July. Is that right?
Yeah. So if we go up
yep.
to the Senate, it doesn't pass, the election will most likely be on July 2.
July 2.
Mm.
Right.
A little while to go, yeah.
So the marketing campaigns will start.
Slowly.
And so you have been vocal about this building and construction
yep.
Reform that's happening. You know, how do you feel it will help the industry coming back? Is it about the industrial relations?
Yeah.
Trying to get rid of that?
It's all about making sure that the law exists. We're not trying to change the law. It exists, yeah. But it's not maintained on construction sites. You have, you know, out of the Royal Commission into Trade Union Corruption, you saw a very large number of people in this industry referred to legal authorities, right, because they were breaking the law. This is a body that can help ensure that in an area where we clearly know that the law is often broken. So it's not about reinventing the wheel or changing anything. It's just saying these are the laws. They exist for a reason. We want people to follow them, and you give a body the power to do that. And it's in an area where it's proven this has worked. And this is the thing that frustrates me about it, is it's existed, it worked, it helped create an environment in which there was greater jobs growth. You know, we just want to bring back something that works, essentially.
Is this akin to the waterfront reforms that we saw many years ago, Wyatt?
Well, I mean, on the waterfront, I mean, you got a whole different issue and different laws, and that was sort of a monopoly type environment, I suppose, where obviously in the construction industry that's not the case. So I wouldn't go that far, but I would simply say it's just about ensuring that the laws as they stand, that people follow them. And I think that makes it easier for, you know, the people that are listening to this podcast, you know, your tradies, your chippies, whatever, to know that they can do business with these really big projects that is great. And that's where you saw the jobs growth previously. And when that becomes really hard because you've got someone who's been a bit militant with you and making sure that that doesn't happen, it's a bad thing for the economy. It's a bad thing for jobs growth.
Mm. So one of the questions we like to ask all of our guests on the show,
yeah.
Don't worry, it's not too heavy, mate, is if you had 1,000 or let's say maybe 400,000 tradies in a room, because you know, we want to get to
He's
every single
one reach.
Of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you had all of those people in a room, what's one piece of advice or one thing you'd like to leave them with?
Well, I suppose in terms of innovation and doing new business, it would be don't be afraid of trying new things. you know, don't try and inoculate yourself or protect yourself from the change that we're seeing. And, you know, if that's putting $50 on a Facebook ad to see if you can get some new customers, give that a go. If that's trying a new app to find some people to help you out on a construction site, give that a go. And if it doesn't work, you know, what really have you lost other than a bit of time and a bit of experience? And I think sometimes breaking out of that risk is really important. From a political perspective, if I could leave them with one message from my own side or my own beliefs, is I just want to let them get on with their job. You know, I want to make it as easy as possible for you to do your job, get out there to work, get new customers, grow your business. And that's all about getting government out of your life, not putting more of us in it. I've never had an entrepreneur, a tradie, a business person come up to me and say, if only the government was more involved in my business, I'd be more successful. Like, that just never happened. So, you know, that's sort of my take-home message.
I think there's listeners fist-pumping and celebrating everywhere. Yeah. It's like, yes, less government.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
And hopefully we've inspired our listeners to be more innovative.
Absolutely.
That's been great fun.
And got them to make an informed vote.
Yeah. Use your vote next time. And, Wyatt, if our listeners do want to find out more about you or perhaps the policies that, you represent, mate, what's the best way to do it?
On my website, wyattroy.com.au, or I actually always like it when people give us a call too. So 0754-323-177.
Wow, the good old-fashioned dog and bone, mate.
Awesome. Exactly. I can hear my mum dialing.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Well, mate, thanks again for coming in, and all the best for the next few months.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. So what did you think, listeners? Politics? New slant? Have you changed your mind about which party you want to vote for? I don't know. That might be a bit of a stretch, but
Do we have to get the other party on now? Do we have to be balanced and unbiased now? We're this media publishing house?
No, because there's, you know, there's Liberal National, there's Labor, there's the Greens, there's...
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know what parties there are. There's the, you know, I like beer party.
isn't there the motor... What's that? Motoring, Senate guy? Motoring enthusiast
party or something?
Yeah.
Wants to get rid of all speed limits or something.
But anyway, we're about innovation today, and that's why we got him on, not politics and such.
The thing that really stuck out for me in what Wyatt was talking about with less government and... You know, the essence of what he's saying, you know, himself and his party are out to do is actually make it easier for us all to do business, to live our lives, so that government really has more of a hands-off approach. Obviously, we need regulation and those sorts of things. And to me, that sounded like personal responsibility, and we've talked about that a little bit on the show, of being able to take responsibility or needing to take responsibility for your business, your marketing, your life, your mindset. And so we had lots of guests on the show about all of those things. So to me, it was really encouraging to hear that we have a political party out there that is not about more control and regulation and, you know, taking from the rich to give to the poor. It's all about letting us live our lives. So that really stuck out for me.
Yep. I agree.
You're still thinking about the fact that you just had Australia's youngest member of parliament on the Tradies Business
Show.
What,
the ABC is going to be ringing me any minute.
Oh, totally. We're going to have
you
a
fill
prime
in on
time
Q&A?
Slot.
Sure. I've got the podcast in the morning, but I can do it that night.
Anyway, I thought that was a great interview. Hope you did too. If you liked it, if you hated it, give us some feedback. We're going to share some listener questions that we've received in another episode. So send us your questions or your comments.
You know what? I'm just going to up it. I reckon we go for Malcolm.
Yeah, let's get him on the show.
Yeah. Why not? We can only ask.
Get the big man on the show.
The guy in the States got Obama. He may have millions of listeners, but hey.
We might after we get... Or we might have a lot of hate mail too. So, look, if you are wanting to innovate in your business, and particularly in the area of marketing, which is a critical aspect of any trade and contractor business, where you want to be either talking to prospective new customers or loving your existing customers, which is an often overlooked area of marketing, is actually looking after your current clientele, then we've got, at the Tradies Business Show, 99 free marketing tips for our listeners.
And look, we'll give away what did mention one, Facebook ads, and we do sing about Facebook ads all the time.
Yep.
So there's 98 more.
But if you want to grab our quick list of 99 marketing tips for your trade business, just go to our website, really simple process, tradiesbusinessshow.com, and there's an opt-in box there. All you have to do is give us your name and email address. We'll drop it in your inbox, and you can start innovating and implementing those marketing ideas straight away and get some change happening. So go do that and tell all your friends about it. Tell all your friends about us. Send us your questions. I don't know. Do heaps of stuff. And until next episode.
Hurry.
You've been listening to The Tradies Business Show with Warwick Bidwell and Michaela Clark. Want to get off the tools and into true business ownership? Find out how at tradiesbusinessshow.com.